This chapter 48 and also the following, Jacob is near the end of his life. You remember we had occasion last time to look at chapter 47 and verse 28, where we read that Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. He had 17 years to see and enjoy Joseph and the growing family. And the whole age of Jacob was 147 years. Well, in the passage we have read, Jacob is now toward the close of that life. And before he departs, he has to do two things. Confer a blessing upon Joseph's sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. And secondly, a blessing upon all 12 of his sons, who will grow into the 12 tribes of Israel. Now, Jacob's blessing Ephraim and Manasseh here is in chapter 48. And it's interesting how that in Hebrews 11, where Jacob appears among the heroes of faith, the one thing that is selected out of Jacob's long and eventful life as an example of that faith is here. Hebrews 11 and verse 21. And it's interesting that of all the things that the writer could have chosen, he just mentions this one. By faith, Jacob, when he was a dying, blessed both the sons of Joseph and worshipped. That one act. Why is that, I wonder? Why didn't he choose any number of instances where Jacob displayed tremendous faith? Yet this one, blessing Ephraim and Manasseh. Well, isn't one of the reasons surely this, that he was exhibiting faith in the sense that he was doing something here in God's name with a view to the future. And he was trusting the Lord for what would become of his descendants, trusting the Lord for the fulfillment of the promises to him and to them. And that is an act of faith. And we have to do that sometimes, don't we? Because when we think of the future after we're gone from this life, we'll have no more part to play here below, and we've got to commit things into God's hands. And we've got to trust the Lord for everything. The future of our children, grandchildren, generations to come, as the Lord tarry, the future of the church in this world, God's cause and truth. And we are exhibiting great faith when we can leave these matters with God confidently, praying to him, asking him, trusting him to be a God to those who come afterwards and fulfill his purposes. Well, the Lord respects that and honours that kind of faith, and that's the one example of faith mentioned of Jacob here. Coming to details just for a moment, what is actually happening here in Genesis 48 regarding the blessing of Ephraim and Manasseh is this, that instead of God making Joseph one of the tribes of Israel, what happens is that the blessing comes through Jacob onto Joseph's two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh instead, and they become two tribes in Israel. And so later on in the Old Testament, when you have the 12 tribes mentioned, you don't have the tribe of Joseph, you have Ephraim and Manasseh. But that would make 13, wouldn't it? Well, you see, Levi was the priestly tribe, and they were set apart for the priesthood, so they're not counted in that way. So the 12 comprise of the ones we know, 10 of them, and Ephraim and Manasseh. And what Jacob is also doing remarkably is this: he's reversing the order of priority between these two sons. Manasseh was the firstborn, Ephraim was younger, and Jacob crosses his hands, as you remember, and Joseph tries to sort of straighten them out again. He says, no, I know what I'm doing. And what he does is he sets Ephraim the younger in front of Manasseh the Older. And so, can you see how history is repeating itself? With Esau and Jacob, and the blessing that would have gone to Jacob from old blind Isaac, and how that Jacob impersonated Esau to get the blessing, but now old blind Jacob is giving the blessing to the older Ephraim above Manasseh. And there's no impersonating and deceit. It's all now according to as God would have it, and it goes forward straightforwardly. And you find that Ephraim becomes the more important tribe compared to Manasseh. In fact, Ephraim becomes so important that in the prophets, sometimes some of the minor prophets, we find the whole 10 tribes of Israel are designated by Ephraim. O Ephraim, how shall I give thee up, says Jehovah. It means the whole of Israel, the 10 tribes at any rate, but designated by Ephraim. So he is advanced compared with Manasseh and becomes almost the most important tribe of Israel. Well, this is what is happening in this chapter. But as Joseph brings the two lads, Ephraim and Manasseh, to their grandfather Jacob for the blessing, you find that Jacob begins to reminisce. Verse 3. And Jacob said unto Joseph, God Almighty appeared unto me at Luz, that's Bethel, in the land of Canaan, and blessed me, and said, behold, I will make thee fruitful and multiply thee, and so on. And then look at verse 7. When I came from Paddan, Rachel died by me in the land of Canaan, and I buried her at Ephrath. That's what older people tend to do, isn't it? The older we get, the more we slip into reminiscing. Because the longer the life that we've now got in the past, the more we've got to think about compared with what we may have left. And so we tend to travel back, don't we? And I suppose we start doing it when we get to middle life. And we are very given to almost living in the past sometimes. But that's not a bad thing if, like Jacob, we can live in the past and reminisce in thinking of God's mercy to us and God's dealings with us. God appeared unto me at Luz, and Rachel died, and I buried her. But it's all language of faith and acknowledging the Lord's dealings and so on. And that's a very wonderful thing if we can do that. It's a very sad thing if we've only got our memories and they're just human things. But if we've got our memories that are also memorials to the blessing of God upon our lives and his dealings and faithfulness with us, well, that's another thing. As Toplady put it, I muse on the years that are past, wherein my defence thou hast proved, nor wilt thou relinquish at last a sinner so signally loved. Well, as Jacob reminisces, he also says these words that we have recorded in verse 11. As Jacob, hardly able to make out what is in front of him really, because his sight is so affected by age, but he can just see and make out who they are. Israel said unto Joseph, I had not thought to see thy face, and lo, God hath showed me also thy seed, thy two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. And what a word of testimony that is, isn't it? I didn't expect ever to see you alive, Joseph. But God has not only given me to see you alive these 17 years, but I've even seen your children, your seed, Ephraim and Manasseh. Well, that was an amazing turn up for the book as far as Jacob was concerned. For 13 years he had given up Joseph for dead. He never expected to see him alive. And yet God saw it. God saw to it that he not only saw Joseph again, but also his two sons. It's what's been called the impudence of providence. Sometimes God springs surprises, unexpected surprises that astound us. And he outdoes the hopes of his people. He outdoes the despair of his people as well. I had not thought to see thy face, and lo, God hath showed me also thy seed. Well, there's a lesson in this for us, dear friends. And first of all, I want to look at what Jacob thought. I had not thought to see thy face. Now we know, don't we, from all that we've seen so far in the life of Jacob, that seeing Joseph was a sight he was just not expecting. It's clear from his reaction at the time when Joseph disappeared that all hope had gone. Remember chapter 37, verse 33, when that dreadful day came which saw Jacob's older sons come back with Joseph's torn and blood-stained coat. And he knew it and said, "It is my son's coat. An evil beast hath devoured him. Joseph is without doubt rent in pieces." Verse 35, "I will go down into the grave unto my son, mourning." Thus his father wept for him. And then chapter 42, verse 36, "Joseph is not," he said. So it was all gone. It vanished. Never expected that he would see Joseph again. And when he says in verse 37 here, "I had not thought to see thy face," he may even mean Joseph's face still and pale in death. Not even his body. Not even a body to bury. And so the hope of any sight of Joseph had gone. Now, what lay behind this despair? Well, he had reacted to what he had seen, hadn't he? That's what made him have no more hope. You see, the torn, blood-stained coat, and he drew the obvious conclusion, as we've said, Joseph is without doubt rent in pieces. However, this is the thing, Jacob was wrong. He was wrong. He did not reckon on being deceived. And he was shown this evidence. He jumped to the only reasonable conclusion, but it was the wrong conclusion. He was mistaken. And he had been deliberately misled by others. Now, dear friends, it's like that with us when we tend to give up hope over anything. Beware of simply going on outward appearance, how it looks to you, and the conclusion that you draw from it. There is someone who deceives, and there is someone who wants to mislead us and drive us to despair. And we know who that is, the devil. And he can point to appearances, can't he? And he can plant negative thoughts in our minds. And if there's a matter that you're struggling with to try to trust God for, a thing that you're praying about and hoping that God will answer you over, the devil comes in and he will make you look at the impossibility of the thing, and he will point to it and he will suggest thoughts to your mind, all with a view to make you come to the conclusion that really it's no use. There's no future. It'll never be any different. Prayer will never be answered. There's no point in ever thinking like that at all. You see, the devil can do that. Remember, he sidled up to Eve and he pointed to the tree of the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil. And he put thoughts into her mind to try to get her to despair of trusting in the Lord, but rather doing her own thing. In the wilderness, he pointed to some stones. with the Son of God and said, command these stones to be made bread. Why don't you? If you're the Son of God, why don't you exercise your power and work a miracle for yourself? You see, to try to deflect our Lord from trusting in God and doing his own thing and taking the way of the flesh. This is what we read in Ephesians 6 as the wiles of the devil. And the devil comes and he acts the part of these brothers to their father. Is this your son's coat? Bloodstained, torn. Poor Jacob looks at it and is aghast, jumps to the only conclusion and gives up all hope, and that's it. It's all gone. Never expects to see Joseph again. He was deceived. And the devil would have us be deceived as well. This is something of the struggle Abraham had, wasn't it? Or Abram, I should say, when he was younger, although he was too old, he and Sarai, over the matter of the promised heir. How could they have a son of their very own? And as Abraham thought about his body and Sarah's barren womb and the human biological impossibility of this, you can imagine the devil coming in, can't you? And whispering thoughts that made the whole prospect of them having a son totally preposterous. And it was a struggle. And the devil loves to try to deceive us and make us give up hope and be overwhelmed by the visible and the obvious and what seems impossible, so that we no longer find that we can look to God or hope in him. We virtually give up. But Abraham, you see, it said in Romans 4, he considered not his own body, nor the deadness of Sarah's womb, but was strong in faith. But if he had considered, and if the devil had succeeded, then he would have not hoped in God. But Jacob, you see, had given up. So we've got to resist this. And one of the hardest things for us, we believers, is this, isn't it? 2 Corinthians 5, verse 7. We walk by faith, not by sight. You see, God trades in faith and calls us to trust him. The devil trades in sight and makes things vividly real to sight, and encourages us to give up and not hope for anything from God. It's impossible. That's what Jacob thought. I had not thought to see thy face. Got to look beyond what we can see. I like that incident in 2 Kings 6 and verse 17. Do you remember where there are two men looking at the same situation in very different ways, one by sight, the other one by faith? It's Elisha and his young servant, isn't it? Elisha is in the city of Dothan. The Syrians surround the city menacingly, and the servant goes out in the morning and he looks out, and to his absolute horror he sees this great army encircling the city, and he runs in and tells his master, alas master, what shall we do? And Elisha prayed and said, Lord, I pray thee, open his eyes. Doesn't mean the outward eyes, it means the inward eyes of faith, doesn't it? Open his eyes that he may see. And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire round about Elisha. There was no danger. But you see, the young man at first walked by sight, and it was a Syrian army, and hope evaporated. Elisha was looking all the time by faith, and he prayed, and the young man could see by faith as well. Horses and chariots of fire round about Elisha. We should never give up hope, dear friends. We should never allow ourselves to be so overwhelmed by what we see with our eyes that we can no longer trust God for what seems impossible. Jacob had done that, and he lived to regret it. He lived to acknowledge that he had not thought to see Joseph's face. It's interesting that the word thought there, I had not thought, can actually be translated to pray. In other words, he was no longer praying about Joseph. Well, of course not. What's the point? The boy's dead, isn't he? Torn in pieces by a wild beast. He had the evidence to prove it. Why bother? How wrong he was. And how hasty and pessimistic. Don't give up praying. Don't give up hoping. Because you never know what God is yet going to do. And even though the evidences seem to mock you and proclaim that it's ridiculous to hope and to pray and expect that God will come in for you and change things and give you what you need, never ever come to the point where you think like Jacob, I had not thought to see thy face. Well, the other thing is this: what Jacob thought, but what the God of Jacob did. Look at it there in verse 11. And lo, God hath showed me also thy seed. The implication, of course, is God has not only showed me your face, Joseph, but your seed, your sons. In other words, you see, God did something for Jacob that was not even prayed for. That's remarkable, isn't it? 13 years. No prayer for Joseph, because no hope. And God worked for him as if he had prayed all that time. Now, true it is that usually the blessing we need is tied to our asking for it, isn't it? We don't pray, God won't give. Ask, and it shall be given you. But sometimes the Lord delights to surprise and to astound us over a matter like this. I had not thought, I had not prayed, God has shown me your face and your seed. Isn't that amazing? And dear friends, I learned from this that if God was pleased to put to shame Jacob's despair when he never prayed, perhaps how much more will he put to shame any despair we're tempted to if we do pray? And therefore we should keep praying. He confounded Jacob's despair, didn't he? Joseph is very much alive again, not only how he was, but far greater and better than he was. Grown up into a fine man, a prime minister of Egypt, the joy of any father's heart, in a position to do his father and whole family good. What a tremendous thing that is, isn't it? He exceeded what Jacob might have ever dared to hope. Also thy seed to grow into the two tribes among the 10 of Israel. And dear friends, again I say we should never give up hope. What the God of Jacob did here. Never give up hope. That spiritually dead son. God can not only show us a radiant Christian face, but also his seed, a minister of the gospel, begetting souls through the preaching. Or perhaps the valley of dry bones situation, everything dead, everything bleached white, everything hopeless. And God can not only breathe and bless and bring life to the situation and bring those bones together, but make an exceeding great army out of the situation. God has showed me also thy seed. That crying need that just goes on and on and permits no change to come to it. No matter how much we pray, no matter what we try to do, God is able to so transform it beyond all recognition. God hath showed me also thy seed. That matter that you think will never be any different, and you may be tempted to give up hope over, like Jacob had done long ago, God can easily transform. He is the God concerning whom it said that the things that are impossible with men are possible with God. Jacob lived to see it. What Jacob did not know all this time, over these 13 years, was God was working all the while, secretly, without Jacob knowing, in another place, in all kinds of ways, bringing the matter to this head where now Jacob saw Joseph alive, as we saw last week, and fell upon him and wept with joy. And now he sees his face and his seed. Doesn't it remind us of Ephesians 3 and verse 20? Now unto him that is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think. Not only just to answer prayer, but to give so much more than we've asked for, and to astonish us as to the measure in which he has granted the blessing. If you think about that verse, it sort of mounts step by step into something higher and higher and higher, doesn't it? Ephesians 3, verse 20. Now unto him that is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask. Think about it in relation to prayer. We ask. Paul says here, God is able to do above what we ask. But not only that, God is able to give us, to do for us, above all that we ask. But it doesn't stop there. God is able to give us abundantly above all that we ask. But it doesn't stop there. God is able to give us exceeding abundantly above all that we ask. But it doesn't even stop there. God is able to give us exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think. Even what may have been in our wildest dreams, our most daring imaginations, God is able to exceed even that, so that he leaves us amazed. Well, wasn't it so here, to a great degree? And Jacob, I say, hadn't even asked, had he? But God did for him above all, abundantly above all, exceedingly abundantly above all he'd asked, or even what he could think. Well, the God of Jacob is able. And it's a word for us, dear friends, isn't it? A word for us to quicken faith and put a spur into our praying, so that we're not put off by what seems a doomed and hopeless situation, that we're not so overawed by what is visible and apparent before our eyes, but that we look higher and further, and that we don't think like Jacob thought, who imagined he would never see Joseph again. Although we understand how easy it was and obvious it was that that could never be for Jacob, but he was wrong. We've got to think about the God of Jacob, and our problem is we leave God out of the picture. And if you leave God out of the picture, all you've got left is the human impossibility, and as we say, humanly speaking. But the Christian has more than humanly speaking. We have the living God and what he says and what he can do. Notice Jacob's language. God hath showed me also thy seed. He attributes it to God. This is what he has done. This is what he can do. This is the language of faith that has been truly surprised and astounded here. A faith that Jacob really never had, and never had even turned into prayer. And yet the Lord sprung this marvel and this wonder upon him. At the Red Sea, In Exodus 15 and verse 20, when the Lord brought them through the waters and safely onto the other side, and the Egyptians had been swallowed up, the Israelites sang there, "Who is a God like unto thee, glorious in holiness, fearful in praises, doing wonders, opening the Red Sea, making the way for the people, bringing them safely through." Who would have thought that that would have been done when just a little while before they were trapped, weren't they? The Red Sea in front of them, wilderness either side, nowhere to run, Egyptians bearing down upon them, capture or slaughter inevitable, imminent, and then God opened up the way and God did that great wonder. Well, "Lo, God hath showed me also thy seed." When we trust him, God honours our faith. And if he did such for Jacob, I say, who had not been able to trust him and not even prayed about it, how much more will he do it for us if we trust and if we pray? Well, may the Lord help us then to prove this for ourselves, and may we glorify him as he comes in for us. Let us sing together now hymn 465. "Leave God to order all thy ways, and hope in him, whate'er betide. Thou wilt find him in the evil days, thy all-sufficient strength and guide. Who trusts in God's unchanging love, builds on the rock that naught can move." 465.